This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Good afternoon. This is Keeping the Faith. My name is Don Nolan. I'm filling in for Steve this afternoon. Steve, unfortunately, had to go attend a funeral outside of town, and he will be back next Sunday. And we have a very interesting program for you today that I think, if you're interested, this is a call-in show, and feel free to call in. Let me introduce our guests first, and I'll give you the numbers to call in. This afternoon, we're discussing a local initiative connected with UNESCO. In case you do not know, the anagram UNESCO stands, what it stands for, it is United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization. UNESCO is a specialized agency of the United Nations. Its mission is to, quote, contribute to peace and security in the world by promoting collaboration among nations through education, science, culture, and communication in order to further universal respect for justice, the rule of law, and for the human rights and fundamental freedoms which are affirmed for the peoples of the world without distinction of race, sex, language, and religion. That's a quote from the Constitution of UNESCO. Just to give you a little idea of what that program is about in case you're not that well acquainted. There is a UNESCO-related initiative called the UNESCO Center for Peace. And this afternoon, we're very privileged to have as our guest this afternoon, Mr. Guy Jochen, who is the Executive Director of the UNESCO Center for Peace. Welcome to the program, Mr. Jochen.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here.
Did I pronounce that right,
Jochen? Yes, definitely.
If I say Guy, you can pop me on the head. With Mr. Jochen is Ms. Barbara Ford, who is a member of the U.S. National Commission for UNESCO. I understand that she was appointed to that position by none other than Hillary Clinton. She can tell us a little bit about that later, perhaps. She also is the director of the Mortenson Center for International Library Programs at the University of Illinois. Barbara, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So did I get those details right in the introduction?
Yes, you did.
Guy,
yes, definitely.
Very good.
Yes.
Good. Just to give you an impression of the spirit of the UNESCO Center for Peace, here is a quote from, I gather it's the Constitution. Quote, since war begins in the minds of men, it is in the minds of men that the defenses of peace must be constructed. I take it that's in the Constitution?
Yes, definitely. In preamble of UNESCO, yes.
Nice expression of what you're about. The reason Guy and Barbara here, Mr. Jochen and Ms. Ford, are with us this afternoon is related to another title that Mr. Jochen has. He is chairman of the U.S. National Commission for UNESCO Clubs, Centers, and Associations. And he's in town this week to inaugurate the newly formed Urbana-Champaign UNESCO Center for Global Citizenship. I guess the anagram is UCGC.
Yes.
You haven't gotten any flack for it being CUGC?
No, we haven't.
No,
not
will.
Yet.
You will.
We will, I know.
This is, I understand your description is a town gown initiative with the goal of promoting intercultural relationships, understanding, and peace. While here, Mr. Jochen will also meet with the local NAACP.
Yes,
right?
I'm an activist.
You're also going to talk to kids at a couple of local schools. I gather there's a university talk along with other activities. And I happen to find out that you're also the president of the Frederick County, Maryland NAACP, as well as vice president for the Maryland State NAACP.
Yeah,
right?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. And you travel around the world promoting UNESCO's mission. You have created the international model United Nations Summer Camp, Regional Model United Nations, the U.S. World Heritage Educational Tour, Distinguished Speaker Series. All of this prompts me to ask, when do you sleep?
Good question. Yes, thank you very much. You really did a fantastic job over there, you know. And I think the quote from the preamble of UNESCO actually summarizes everything, because usually people, what UNESCO is all about, what we are doing, and the bottom line is this. After the Second World War, you know, people realized that, you know, people were trying to say, no, we had two world wars in a very short period of time, you know, in a lifetime, which is something that every single person was saying was unacceptable. So they were thinking about ideas on how to put an end to that. Okay, so the idea came, they realized that just something that has failed before, just a peace based exclusively upon political and economic arrangement between countries was not enough. The fear, the misunderstanding of other people and culture actually led to the war. So there was the need to create a new organization that's going to go beyond just the contract between government, right, and things like that. Go at the heart of what humanity is, mm-hmm, all about, you know, culture, going to education, science, culture, and communication. So, mm-hmm, that's how UNESCO was founded. And like you say in the preamble, since war begins in the minds of men, it is in the minds of men that the defense of peace must be constructed. So UNESCO Club, Center Association, is to develop a program that's going to raise the peace in the minds of men.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it was interesting.
And you have 3,800? Is that right?
Actually, we are close to 5,000 clubs around the world right now.
My goodness.
Center Association, yes. Mm-hmm.
That is amazing. When I was talking to you earlier, and I think you mentioned the first one was in 1947 in Japan.
Exactly. Just after the Second World War, you know the tragedy of Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Right.
So it was significant that a Japanese man realized that, yes, we needed to, after the UNESCO was founded, they said, let's do this. He came out with the idea of creating a UNESCO club, which was not there was none before that. So he realized that we have to find a way to end the carnage, and then he created the first UNESCO club.
So when did the growth to 5,000, has this been a steady growth over the past 60-some-odd years, or has it increased recently? Or how?
Actually, this funny thing is that even when he created the first club, Japan was not a member of UNESCO.
Right.
UNESCO after that, just mm-hmm, to tell you how significant it is. But then it was a spontaneous movement. You know, people, you know, when people heard about it, some few people, it was just a couple of hundred, maybe up to 100 clubs. But the main switch was in 1949. Mm-hmm. When Mr. James Torres, but it was Director General of UNESCO, actually capitalized on the creation of UNESCO, because here we have a worldwide movement, okay, and that needed grassroots. You know, UNESCO was not supposed to be people that would be sitting somewhere and dictating peace, because mm-hmm, we realized that failed before, okay. Mm-hmm. Mr. Torres was the Director General of UNESCO in 1949. Actually, at that time, there was only around 400 clubs around the globe. Mm-hmm. He actually asked for the promotion of clubs across the globe. And that's where everything started,
mm-hmm,
1949.
I was reading somewhere that the League of Nations,
yes,
had an organization that was the
before the
prior mm-hmm, creation of the club associations movement, something like Club for Intellectual Development or something. And you're saying that didn't work terribly well?
Actually, the League of Nations actually preceded the United Nations. But exactly,
right,
yes. Some of it didn't work well because, mm-hmm, you know, just the way the structure.
Oh, we know the League of Nations didn't work well, but
yeah,
there was this subgroup.
Yeah. They kind of have some of the same problems, yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, you are here specifically to help inaugurate a local initiative related to this, and this is the UNESCO Center for Global Citizenship that will be housed at the University of Illinois, as I understand it. Is that right, Barbara?
Yes, the Center for Global Studies will be our home, but this is very much a community effort. We welcome all kinds of community members to get involved.
All right. Well, let's hear more about it. Let me let our guests know who may be unacquainted with 580 programs or talk shows here. This is a call-in show, and if you would like to speak with our guests, Mr. Guy Jochen and Barbara, last name, sorry.
Ford.
About this new initiative, you can call in locally. The number is 333-9455. Out of the immediate area, you can call an 800 number. It's 1-800-222-9455. Now, as I understand it, Barbara, you have been interested for a long time in international relations. You've got a degree related to that. And because of that and other activities, Hillary Clinton appointed you to this position. And this, how did that lead to the proposal that we form a Center for Global Citizenship related to UNESCO?
Well, the American Library Association was invited to have a representative to UNESCO. I was nominated for that position, and Hillary Clinton invited me to join. So it's been a real pleasure to become part of the U.S. National Commission. It has over 100 members from all sorts of organizations. But I think that a lot of these activities really need to happen on the local level. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was a wonderful opportunity to start something that could benefit our community. While we have a lot of really good things going on, we don't have that many things that bring together the community and the university. Mm-hmm. And Amani Ayad, Helene Silverman, and I thought that it would be great to start this club that would involve the community and the university to talk about issues of global citizenship. Mm-hmm. So we have worked with Mr. Jorkin and are having this inaugural event, and we have lots of ideas for things we can do.
Now, this event, and to be precise, is coming up at the Champaign Public Library, April 15th, right?
You yes.
want to give us the details on this?
Yes. So Monday, April 15th from 5 to 7 at the Champaign Public Library, Mr. Jorkin will be talking on UNESCO and the mission for peace in a troubled world. We'll also be inaugurating our new UNESCO Center for Global Citizenship. We'll have a reception afterward with some refreshments, so we welcome everyone to come to that event. There'll also be another event on Tuesday at noon at the university in 219 Davenport Hall, where we'll talk about community activism and UNESCO's millennial goals. So we welcome people to participate in either of those events. And then we're also looking for people who want to get involved in the new UNESCO Center for Global Citizenship. We've got lots of ideas of activities we can organize, but we need help in doing that.
Now, when you say local, and you the title is Urbana-Champaign, do you mean to include a broader region or just Urbana-Champaign?
Anyone who's in the region and wants to participate in things is more than welcome.
What is the next closest association? Chicago, I assume? Indianapolis.
Okay, thank you. I think I can step in and shed some light on that. And maybe it may be very important for your listener to understand you know, a little bit about UNESCO Club, what it is, and UNESCO Club movement around the world. Mm-hmm. And because we were talking about UNESCO and what is the relationship between UNESCO and UNESCO clubs. I think it's very important for your movement. So, like I say, in 1949, when the Director General of UNESCO actually encourage countries to really have new clubs, it became a sensation because it was very important to have this grassroots movement that are going to actually promote the ideal of UNESCO locally and help make sure that this movement is not just something that's directed from Paris or from San Francisco. So UNESCO clubs became the way UNESCO actually is the only UN-related agencies that has a part of, at its part of its organigram, things that happen in each country. Mm-hmm. Every single country around the world, member of UNESCO, has what we call the National Commission for UNESCO.
Right.
Okay. So the U.S. National Commission for UNESCO is at the State Department, and we happy to have Barbara Ford, one of the commissioners. I still remember at the last meeting, annual meeting, when after I did a presentation of UNESCO Club, she came to me and said, you know what, this is a great idea to have a center here. Mm-hmm. You know, just like an idea, right? But here it's happening. So each country has a National Commission for UNESCO. Most of the countries around the world have it at the Ministry of Education, some Ministry of Culture, but here in the U.S. we have it at the State Department.
Okay. You just, as I understand it, got back from Romania?
Yes, actually, actually, my last trip, I went to Romania. From Romania, actually, I went back to Italy again. Mm-hmm. Where the World Federation of UNESCO Club Center and Association was having its meeting.
I see.
Okay, and that's where the movement decided to have the next executive board meeting in the United States of America.
Got it.
That'll be in March of next year.
Well, the reason I put it that way, if the local center grows as you hope it to grow, you will, I assume, be interested in people in outlying communities throughout the state. The region could be larger than just Urbana-Champaign, in other words.
Yeah. Absolutely. Right. We would welcome people who in the region who are interested in getting involved. I would say the U.S. has not been as active in forming clubs as many other countries. As I've traveled and worked in other countries, many of them have very active UNESCO clubs in a lot of different places. In the U.S., we don't have as many. So
Is that because of competition with other organizations in the United States that are interested in similar topics, or what?
Actually, it's, you know, when the U.S. was out of UNESCO for over 20 years.
Right.
So it's still an unknown entity there for many people. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you that since the reentry, things are changing at a rapid speed. In order to host the World Federation of UNESCO Club next year, we're actually restructuring the movement. That's one of the mandates that I have. So basically,
Did you say restructuring?
Yes. I mean, to make sure that there's... So just this past Thursday, I was in New York to swear in the first state and in state chapter.
I see. Mm-hmm.
So, and we have, I'm here today, very happy here, but in about a week or so, I'll be in MIT creating another club over there. So it's growing very quickly. We have about 10 clubs and center right now. But again, it's very important to understand that when you say UNESCO club, it englobes three sub groups. Mm-hmm. And that's why we say it's a center, it's a club, it's an association. But we all call them under UNESCO clubs.
Right.
So we have about 10 in the U.S. right now. But the goal, my personal goal, is that by the time we are hosting the World Federation of UNESCO Clubs and Association in March 2014, to have at least a club in all the states.
Okay. That's sort of what I was wondering. What is the vision down the future? And that's what you're shooting for?
Yes, definitely.
State-based?
Actually, where we already have a center like here, this center can play a leadership role at this stage. So we are going, it's a case by case, because this is a grassroots movement. We don't have resources. You know, we have people, depending on the time that they are put in. But yes, we are going to have state chapters, state chapters in every place. And then, you know, people have been calling our office to make sure they want to create new clubs. So we're going to help universities, citywide, statewide. So, it still will be a little bit different, but the goal is to have as many clubs as possible.
Right. Barbara, what are the anticipated programs that you hope to get going with the local center that would draw in people who might be interested?
Well, we've got a number of ideas. One of them is we're going to start a reading and discussion group, and the first meeting of that will be on May 6th. And we're actually going to be reading some free things that are available on UNESCO's website. So if people are interested in things like that, that's one of our activities. We're also thinking we might visit some UNESCO World Heritage Sites. Mm-hmm. Cahokia Mounds is the nearest one to us, and we're thinking of organizing a trip.
Right.
To go there. We also hope to do more with the schools. Mr. Jorkin will be meeting with some, but we would like to do other things with the schools. We were thinking we might do some traveling exhibits and other activities. And, of course, there are many international days we could celebrate as a community. Mm-hmm. And a natural one for us would be the Jazz Day, because we have such an active jazz community here. But the Ethics Day coming in the spring. And I'm very interested in radio I know there was an International Radio Day where we might cooperate with programs like this or with WILL to do some activities. So I think there's lots of things we can do. The question is, will people step forward to take leadership roles in organizing these things?
Well, in just a minute, let's talk a little bit about specifically what are the themes, goals, and topics that might get people with expertise inspired. Let's just do that in just a second. Just wanted to mention that here on 580, we've got lots of fine programs, and we thought you might be interested in knowing what's going on Focus 580 this coming week. Thank you.
Once every second, do it for 300 million years. And you'll have done as many multiplications as the University of Illinois' new Blue Water supercomputer can do in 1 second. On the next Focus, we'll talk with Bill Grupp of the U of I's Institute for Advanced Computing Applications and Technologies about what supercomputers can do and what that means for all of us. I'm Jim Meadows. Focus, Monday morning at 10 on WILL AM 580.
Welcome back. We are talking with guests this afternoon who are involved with the formation of a new initiative of the organization called UNESCO, which is the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization. And we have with us a very distinguished guest, Mr. Guy Jochen, who is the executive director of the UNESCO Center for Peace. And he is with Barbara Ford, who is one of the founders of a local UNESCO initiative that we're talking about this afternoon called the Center for Global Leadership. And there is an upcoming event related to this, the initiation of this organization. The Center for Global Citizenship is this Monday afternoon, 5 to 7 p.m. at the Champaign Public Library. So if you're interested in UNESCO and the mission for peace in a troubled world, which is the theme, please go listen to a special speech by Mr. Guy Jochen, who is our guest this afternoon, who will be talking about this program. Barbara, could we talk a little bit about the mission of this Center for Global Citizenship that is being created and kicked off this week? What are some of the general themes and topics that people might be interested in?
Some of the things that we hope to do with this new UNESCO Center for Global Citizenship here in Champaign-Urbana is, first of all, promote global citizenship, make people aware of the things that are going on around the world and this idea of building peace in by knowing one another better. We also want to increase intercultural understanding because we feel that is the best way to promote peace. So we'll be looking at opportunities to do things that cross cultures and help us learn more about one another. We also want to disseminate cultural information. There's so much rich culture around the world, and we have here at the university a Collaboration for Cultural Heritage Management and Policy, or CHAMP, at the University of Illinois, headed by Helene Silverman. And they do lots of work with World Heritage Sites and disseminating cultural information. We want to continue with that. Another thing we're very interested in is growing inclusive knowledge societies. I'm a librarian. We know how important it is that everyone have access to good information, to make good decisions, and be productive citizens.
Can you define what a knowledge society is for people who haven't heard that term before?
Well, an inclusive knowledge society is a place where people have the information they need to make good decisions, to move their community and their individual life forward. So there are a number of things that we need to do to ensure that that's true. And UNESCO works with things like good access to information, keeping the internet free and open, and being sure that people everywhere have access to the information that they need. We're also interested in increasing dialogue about American public policy in these areas. We think that it's very important that we as local citizens talk about these topics and become informed and then share our perspective with our elected officials so that our government acts in ways that we agree with.
Mr. Jokin, you have a very interesting personal history that, as I understand it, brought you into this kind of work. You grew up in Cameroon, I believe.
That's correct, yes.
And I understand that your father was an activist and got himself into hot water, as apparently you did too, with Cameroon officials. Tell us a little bit about that episode in your life and how that experience guided you to this kind of work.
Okay, thanks very much. It's a very painful time because anytime I remember that, I keep thinking it was so unfair. But again, yes, during colonialism, you know, you have some Western country that, you know, countries that thought they knew better than any.
Colonialism.
Yeah,
okay.
Colonialism. Mm-hmm. So, and there came a time where they had to leave. Okay. And we have countries like Cameroon, like France, that, you know, was running Cameroon. It actually was a mandate from the United Nations to run Cameroon and help Cameroon become independent. But actually, when it was time to leave, they never intended to leave the country. So in the country, they were given the independence, but at the same time, the real leaders, those who actually care for their country, were decimated. They were killed. They were exiled, and because they wanted to put in place puppets, you know, those who were going to sell the country to them, tell them, give them whatever I wanted. So, so eventually there was a resistance, and my father was part of those who actually wanted a real independence instead of just, you know, Cameroon choosing some people to be there, and France choosing some people to be there, and, you know, and do whatever they did for them. Mm-hmm. So as a result of that, he was the first mayor well liked in our region, which is West Cameroon. The city is called Cham, well loved. But very quickly, the administration, you know, chose. No, it was danger. It was a danger, not just him, but other people that were fighting for the rights of people.
He was incarcerated, right?
Yes, he was incarcerated. And I was very young. I actually didn't know. I was so young to understand, but anytime my mom would take me to go to jail, when I would see, I was, why can't he go home with us and things like that? So, but later on, I kind of realized that, you know, I was told that this, you don't talk about these kind of things, but start reading. Actually, my father, when eventually was released, he advised me to read. People like Mandela, Gandhi, and was fighting, and all these, you know, those who helped make the world a better place. So you actually pointed me in that direction.
How old were you when he got out?
I was maybe around 15 years old. Yes, that's
very, very formative period for you.
Yes, very, very. I would think that I'm here because of that time, because that was a time where he asked me to really pay attention to history. Most of my friends, you know, math was, you know, you have to be a best student, you have to do math and physics and things like that. You stand out, you know. But he told me, yes, that's very important, but also history is very important. You have to know our history. You have to know our people. That's the only way we are going to do this. That's the only hope. So that's how, you know, I learned from those who helped me, you know, were fighting for human rights, civil rights, and Dr. King, for instance. Yeah, you told me about Dr. King.
Right.
Yes, I read about Dr. King, and that's how I end up following his footsteps, doing what is right.
So talk a little bit about your personal evolution from leaving Cameroon. I understand that you and your father had to leave.
Actually, no. I left. I ended up leaving because through my reading, I came to realize that yes, Cameroon was a small country. You know, Nigeria was a small country. The hope for Africa is to have a united Africa. something the colonial master doesn't want.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, even until now, we see a contract signed between the like France and Cameroon, other countries that make virtually this country not free.
Mm-hmm.
They could not make a decision, you know, an independent decision. They had to go to France and ask for permission to do that, which is unacceptable. So we realized that we were start militating for Africa as you know, we wanted to build Africa as, you know, United States of Africa, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Because from even till now, I still strongly believe in that. So the government didn't like that.
Something similar to the Pan-Africa ideal?
Yes, actually, that's the idea. But the structure will be different because having a club of head of state that a puppet is not going to doesn't resolve the problem, you know. But you wanted to go inside where people could actually elect their people, people to represent them. So
you got particularly interested as a result of these experiences in human rights in particular?
Yes, very much so. And when the Cold War ended, and we saw the Western world of change, you know, what was happening, you know, Gorbachev and Reagan came out.
87, 88, 89.
And then we just said, oh, guess what? This is the time for us to be free. Plus, at that time, the World Bank, the IMF was saying to the people that if you go and fight for freedom, we are going to defend you. We are going to defend you. So we were actually a little bit naive. We really believed them. We went there. And then, you know, as a result, people were fighting for freedom. Many killed, disappeared, and stuff like that. So and one of the those who exiled like me were actually the lucky one.
Where did you go?
At first, when I left Cameroon, I went to Nigeria and Ghana, where I did some studies in, in management, management. And from Ghana, I came to the U.S.
And how did you get from there to the United Nations?
Actually, I did my studies here. When I was in Cameroon, actually, I already was working at a very early age. I strongly, because of my father, I was very much close to the UNESCO movement.
Oh, okay.
There. So at the point,
you,
I was
already
an advisor. Yes,
got it.
I was an advisor to the National Federation of UNESCO Clubs. So it was just natural that when I got to the U.S., you know, I pursued my studies. When I graduated from with my MBA, I decided to work with this center. And it just I got my MBA in 2004, and the U.S. was going back to the UNESCO in 2003. So I worked around with Americans for UNESCO. You know, there were really some former diplomats. One of the strengths of UNESCO is that we have all these great diplomats, all these people doing work. When they retire, what happened to them? You know, sometimes they get all this knowledge, but by the time they retire, they say, sorry, go and stay home.
Right.
But UNESCO Club is a place where they could go and put that knowledge, working with young people and stuff like that. So I actually appeal to all the retired people from the State Department, things like that, and they help us, you know, launch the movement in the U.S.
We are Colin Cho, and if you are interested in our topic this afternoon or you'd like to talk to Mr. Jokin or Ms. Ford about the local initiative that is being kicked off this week, the Center for Global Citizenship, you can call in locally at 333-9455. There's also an 800 number, 1-800-222-9455. You mentioned, Barbara, that one of your topics that you wish to explore with the Center for Global Citizenship is increasing dialogue about American public policy in the various areas. 2011, I think, the United States pulled back on its support for UNESCO. I think it had something to do with UNESCO allowing in Palestine as a member country, and since then there's been a 22% drop in support. Can you talk a little bit about that, and is this something that you hope to discuss?
It's certainly something we hope to discuss and educate people about. I think that many people in the United States are unaware that we're no longer paying our dues to UNESCO. So far, we've been able to continue to be active in UNESCO, but if we don't pay our dues soon, we will lose our vote. at UNESCO.
The United States.
The United States, yes, will lose its vote at UNESCO. And, of course, the U.S. has been very involved in the establishment of UNESCO, and we are losing our influence if we aren't able to vote and aren't able to contribute the funds that we need to UNESCO. So far, I think most of the programs have carried on because other countries have stepped forward, and countries that might have different ideas than we have. So if we want to continue to be the thought leader and very involved in UNESCO, we need to find a way to pay those dues again.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be doing some discussions about that and figuring out how we can work on that. I know that a number of organizations have taken action to encourage our congressional representatives to again begin paying dues, and we can work on that on the local level as well. So, yes, that's one of the issues we'll be talking about.
I understand that we have a caller on line one from Urbana. Hello, you're on Keeping the Faith. I have a question or comment for Mr. Jokin or Ms. Ford. Hello? Hello, are you there? Got him? Maybe we lost him. Call back if you would. Maybe we'll let you hang on too long. UNESCO, when you first look at the activities and what you're planning to do with the Center for Global Citizenship, I don't want to use the word innocuous. It certainly is cutting edge, but many people would think that that's non-controversial. But there are very significant positions or points of view. Maybe we could get into some of these. One of them, maybe perhaps we can start, is just what is meant by the concept of a global citizen. The reason I mention this is there are people who are concerned about multicultural initiatives in general because it waters down universal focus on moral principles, undermines traditional societies. So what do you hope a global citizen will look like through your efforts?
Okay.
Big, broad question, sorry.
Okay, yes. I think Mrs. Ford will really insist on that, but I, as a chairman of the U.S. National Commission for UNESCO Clubs and Association, I couldn't be prouder. When they first contacted me with the name, I was very proud of that. And, I would like it, if someone was to ask me that question, I would, first of all, do you like to have internet where it's only us, are we all proud that today we can communicate with Taiwan, we can communicate to China, we can come to all these places? Isn't that the universality? Isn't that us coming together? And in fact, what is different from you and me? I was born in a small village in Cameroon, right? Here we are talking. Nobody care about that, okay? It's what we bring to the table. And that's what we call humanity. I don't see myself from this kind of. I'm seeing myself as a human being. As a human being, you have some responsibility. We have some, we are all worried about what's going to happen tomorrow. Global warming is a reality, whether we like it or not. We have some major ethics, we have some ethical issues that are going across the globe. We need to face that. So, and the U.S., we have a leadership around the world because people respect some of the things we stand for. So the global leadership for me is something that we should all embrace because we are humans, period.
What is global ethics? The reason I mention it in the connection with global citizenship is there is a concern on the part of people, for example, in social sciences, anthropology in particular, in sociology, that Enlightenment universalism has kind of rolled over the world, and the result is modernism, secularism, and all of the attendant effects, both negative and positive. And Zain, you've been to India, I'm sure, on several occasions. Mm-hmm. There are, I understand, lots of over 30 Indians who have a strong sense of their traditional culture are wringing their hands that their children who are under 30 aren't really worshiping the gods that much or focused on traditional values because they're global citizens. They have bought into a consumerist culture. I'm not saying that is the case. I'm just saying many people worry about this idea of globalization. So what is a global ethics? And is it really something that can rescue individuals in multiple cultures, multiple societies from the onslaught of modernism? Let me put it that way.
I think I'm confident to say that it's something that's going to save humanity as a whole. I think almost all the countries around the globe sign on to the Human Declaration of Human Rights. Mm-hmm. That's the beginning of globalism. Because as a human being, we have some inalienable rights. Mm-hmm. We may say it and not respect them, but that doesn't mean that they are not true. You know, it's facts. You know, the fact is that we, as human beings, have certain things that are within us. Mm-hmm. And we do not want some people, you know, just because people are within boundaries, you know, certain country, and to be denied those rights. So getting people together, because we are not preaching about one set of values versus others. Mm-hmm. Yes, we come together, and what do we want on this earth?
Right.
Okay.
I think we may have our caller back on line one from Urbana. Hello, you're on Keeping the Faith. You have a question or comment?
I had a question for Barbara Ford about the local organization here. Just the dynamics of how you become a member, and is there a membership fee? And you've been talking about money going to UNESCO. Does this club get money from UNESCO or send money to UNESCO? Could you just talk about the operational part of it? And I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you for that question. We're very new. We do not anticipate having dues, although there may, as the clubs evolve, be a need to pay a membership fee in the national and international organization. So far, we've been depending on volunteers and have gotten some local community support for some of our activities, and we're very pleased about that. I think the financial issues are something that we're not sure of at this moment. But since the Center for Global Studies here at the university is hosting the organization, there should not be lots of expenses. What we really want people to do is get involved, and then we'll talk about monetary issues.
Go ahead.
Okay, thank you very much. I think this is I'm really happy to have a concerned citizen like you calling on a show like this. Because just like Barbara said, this is, you know, this is a movement in its infancy. But as at the national level, we are putting a structure in place. The structure have the U.S. Federation of UNESCO Clubs and Association, and we are going to structure ourselves where there will be a membership. I don't know if you are aware of the UNA USA. You know, the United Nations Association of the USA. We're going to model ourselves towards something similar to that. But the membership, we may have an annual membership of 30 or whatever, but it's not something that's, it's not something that you need to purchase a membership to become a member, but it will be a way for you to support your organization, support some of these ideals. Like I said, we have a World Federation of UNESCO Club. When you become a member, you're not just a local member. You may be acting locally. You are thinking globally and acting locally because you are a member of a movement that has 5,000 clubs around the world. And unlike some other clubs where you belong to, where it sees when you leave the country, UNESCO Club, you can go everywhere across the globe. You have other member of the club with you. So, yes, there may be a fee. This structure needs to be put in place. At this moment, all we need is volunteer people who share this mission on making this world a better place, contributing to make this world through education, science, culture, and communication. That's what we are focused on right now, getting the structure in place, getting the team. I'm really happy to have the three founders we have here, Barbara and her team. And I think any support that they may have from people like you coming to the table and say, what can I do to help this movement? This money will never go to UNESCO as a whole. The world, actually, sometimes UNESCO used to help develop, because UNESCO is all about helping people, empowering people. Sometimes they actually help give up some resources to develop organized structure to help local leaders. Because to be a UNESCO club leader, sometimes there may be some training, there may be certain things that we need to know. But so please come and join this new team, and I will be very happy to have your support.
Before we go much further, let me just mention next week on Keeping the Faith, Steve's guest will be Peter Wallace, who is host of the nationally syndicated radio show called Day One. The topic is outstanding Christian preachers. And then the week following, on April 28th, Professor Chet Alwis, who is director of the Baroque Artist of Champaign-Urbana, longtime choir director here at the University of Illinois, and Rabbi Norman Klein of Sinai Temple will focus on a discussion on the oratorio by Handel called Judas Maccabeus. And the oratorio itself will be presented at Smith Music Hall, I believe, on May 19th. And this program on April 28th will be a discussion of that presentation and the issues surrounding it. Okay. Yes, Barbara, you wanted to add something?
I thought it might be helpful to give our website so that if people want more information and aren't able to come to our events, they can get involved. It's http://CGS, which is Center for Global Studies, .illinois.edu/UCGC. And if you didn't get that, you could go to search the Illinois website for the Center for Global Studies or for the name of our club, the UNESCO Center for Global Citizenship, because we really want people to get involved.
I believe we have another caller. Yes? Okay. You're on Keeping the Faith. You have a question or comment for Mr. Jokin.
Is there a chance that we in this country need to have groups of people where we might learn to discuss developing a national ethic that is not so involved with regime change, with developing different kinds of political systems that don't work in tribal or other widespread areas, so that we don't go ahead and develop countries like the United States, where we've simply come in over a period of a couple hundred years, destroying a native tribal society and having it grow into something that is domineering.
Mr. Jorgen?
Okay, I would like to thank you for calling and sharing this moment with us. And one of the strengths of the movement is that the movement is apolitical. We don't do politics, okay? And in contrary to and you, I don't know if you'd be surprised to know that early this year I received an email from the president of the Cuban National Commission for UNESCO and the Iranian National Commission for UNESCO. And
good luck avoiding politics.
That tells you that we try really much. So we really want to do, when we talk about ethics and things like that, we really bring something that's common. We don't, so basically, just to agree with you, we let the professional politician do politics and we bring people together. And, we were talking about ethics, we're talking about things that appeal to us, all of us as human beings, something that's common to us. So definitely, I hope you will call, the local, the new center, Center for Global Citizenship, and contribute and help, help them move forward. Thank you.
I believe we have another caller on line two. Hello, you're on Keeping the Faith. Nope. Waited too long. Sorry about that. Well, let's go back to the discussion earlier. I understand that there's a Global Ethics Day coming up. What is that about?
Okay, thank you. Like I said, I'm very proud to say that the U.S. is now official member of the World Federation of UNESCO Club, Center, and Association. The movement actually has a congress every 4 years. The last one was in Hanoi in Vietnam, where the U.S. actually joined the movement.
I'll be darned.
Yes. And then each year we have the executive board meet somewhere. Okay, you have it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, hold on a second.
Yes,
we give our callers priority. We have a caller on line two. I hope you came back. You're on Keeping the Faith. Question or comment?
Hi, it's a question.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to know a little bit more about why it is so important for the United States to pay its dues for UNESCO, and what are some examples of the programs that UNESCO develops all over the world?
Mr. Jorgen?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. You know, I will answer that question by telling that during the 20 years that the U.S. was out of UNESCO, you had people, you know, some dictators around the globe come in there and trying to push some policies that are against our interests. So if you are not at the table and leading by the principle that we know that the U.S. stands for strongly, you know, some people, you know, like Russia, Russia, or we have a dictator in Africa, in Equatorial Guinea, that, you know, gave some $1 million to the organization to establish a price on their names. If you are not at the table and things like that happening, you know, I think we are missing an opportunity. We stand for something that the UNESCO does very well is to support journalists, for instance. We have people who are killed every single day. Even in Mexico, we have, you know, by drug cartels, or in Africa or in other part of the world, who are killed just because they are reporting the news. They are trying to do their job. UNESCO is at the forefront or something like that. Wouldn't you be proud to know that our government is giving some money to make sure that people have the right to, you know, to speak their mind, and also defending some of the, you know, the less fortunate? These are just some of the few. Internet. We are here. We are very proud to have interaction between countries, internet, open society. This is something that UNESCO is working very, very strongly on. So, water. Water, we know how important water is. UNESCO is at the forefront on hydraulic work across the globe, because if we don't pay attention, we take water for granted today. Tomorrow, we may not have that water, and mm-hmm. it is something that we may not see, but a lot of research have to be done. We talk about the tsunami that's happened. You know, all know what happened in Japan a couple of years ago. UNESCO actually spending a lot of money in making sure they have some system, you know, many people can work together, can interact to make sure that, you know, we have less devastating consequences when we do have, because maybe early warning system and stuff like that. In places like Haiti, in places like Mali in Africa, where, you know, they're going through a civil war, there are people, you have things that, you know, belong to humanity. People, you know, coming. We saw that in also in Afghanistan, where we have those barbarians coming to power and destroying history. And that is something that UNESCO is trying to really work very hard to preserve. So I think these are just some few examples that, you know, we need to be at the table when decisions are made, because we lead, we have the moral, I think, compass, we have the moral on our side. And then if we are not there to present those, to make sure that some of these things are carried on, and other countries that the careless will take on.
Barbara, sounds like an opening topic for your group.
One of the other things that UNESCO does very well on their website is has a portal for free and open software. This is so important today, and it's hard to find these things gathered in one place. They also have open access to scientific information. Extremely important, because so many of the science journals are so expensive and people in some parts of the world can't afford them. There's also a lot of open educational resources that UNESCO works towards.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the good thing about UNESCO is they not only respond to crises, they're planning for the future. They're providing information that people need to build societies that will be productive and contributing parts of the world community in the years ahead.
Like I say, it sounds like you got a topic for your
absolutely
early gathering.
Yes,
already.
Definitely.
So What will people be hearing this Monday at the Champaign Public Library? Describe the event a little bit.
Okay. On Monday at 5 p.m. at the Champaign Public Library, we'll have our keynote speaker, Mr. Jorkin, who will speak out about UNESCO and the Mission for Peace in a Troubled World. I will give a little background on the organization that we're setting up here and how you can get involved. We'll have time for conversation and discussion. We'll have some music from a local group, and then we'll break for a reception where we can all talk to one another and think about how we can move forward with this organization in the future.
Are these people going to be what I understand Mr. Jokin to describe, and you even have a formal group, builders of the universe?
Okay, that's a term that's very dear to us, UNESCO Club members, because we all know that our universe need builders, okay? And when you become member of UNESCO, you are a privileged builder of the universe, because basically what you are doing is that you are contributing to make this world a better place. You are helping others. You are not just, you are part of the solution. That's how we like to see it. You are part of the solution. So, and that title of Builder is something that all the UNESCO Club members.
Your language is the best way to predict the future is to create it.
To create it, definitely. Mm-hmm. That's, I know. If we cannot just let, wishing, washing, stand there and hope that, something, some people somewhere are going to do it. We have to be the one. You know, Gandhi said it better than ever. Be the change you want to see right in the world. So I think there's no other way to say it.
We just have two or three more minutes. Are you happy with how things have gone in South Africa? Is the Truth and Reconciliation model one that you're interested in at all, or is that out of your bailiwick?
That's a very difficult topic, but I would say yes. Overall, yes, because today we saw, I don't think any single human being today is missing the day of apartheid, right? Mm-hmm. So there have been some progress. The overwhelming majority of people that were enslaved, in bondage for so many years, can speak, and but that we don't just you cannot just get someone who was free for he was a slave for 100 years for years and then say you are free now. We are equal. There need to be some time to undo what has been done over centuries. So that's
one of the topics we haven't had a chance to get into. I was hoping to maybe in a future program is this idea of truth and reconciliation. Is extremely intriguing. The United States has plenty of truth and reconciliating to do's. Sure Cameroon and South Africa's work in that direction.
Definitely. I think that was something unique that I don't know if we just had in this part of the hemisphere, we had one of the first women president in Brazil. What did she do? She put a play of truth and a similar
reconciliation.
Yes, conciliation. And actually, I had a luxury. I was lucky to meet one of the lady that actually maybe the only lady in the committee, in the Truth and Reconciliation Committee, does to share their work with us here.
Well, thank you all very much for coming. It was a stimulating conversation. We've been talking to Guy Jokin, Executive Director of the UNESCO Center for Peace, and Barbara Ford, who is associated with the creation of the Center for Global Citizenship. Thank you for joining us. See you next week.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Roger Ebert's 15th Annual Film Festival's influence on film, culture, and our community. Were your memories of Roger from one of his movie review shows, or was it something else he'd written? What mark has he left on your life? Join our conversation next week, April 18th at 10 a.m. on Focus on WILL AM 580.
This week on This American Life, when Dr. Benjamin Gilmer started his new job, he knew that his predecessor in the job was in prison for murder. so he didn't expect so many patients to tell him what a great guy the predecessor was.
He was great. Absolutely.
Well, I mean, if he was over here right now, my kids would still be going over there.
How could such a good doctor go bad? Dr. Gilmer tries to find out this week.
Saturday afternoon at 1 and Sunday evening at 6 on AM 580. This is Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD.